all bad things.
Tragedies, disasters. Bad things.
Trigger warning for everything possible.
What?
Hello.
I'm David.
I'm Rachel.
And this is All Bad Things.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome.
You can follow us at All Bad Things Pod on...
You need to learn how to do this.
It's just better when you do it.
Insta, Twitter, Facebook, TikTok, Twitch, and subreddit at All Bad Things Pod. Email us allbadthingspod@gmail.com. Join our Facebook discussion group and our Discord.
Do all of those things. Not necessarily in that order. See, it's just better when you do it. The fans asked for it.
Oh, do they?
They do.
Somebody
did.
Our adoring public.
Yes. So what do we have going on in the beverage situation tonight?
I am having the Harris Teeter brand knockoff.
There you go.
Of, what are those things called?
May I try?
Yeah, sure. Those sparkling water, sugar, or, you know, diet sugar.
Wow, that's very sweet.
Water, sparkling ice. It's called sparkling ice. That's what it's called. It's the Harris Teeter brand.
Cherry limeade. So I had no idea what you were talking about. I myself am having the usual national local beer.
There's a shock.
Yes, to all the world.
May I,
you may
quickly climb on a tiny soapbox for a moment.
Okay.
In honor of Memorial Day, I would like to, state something highly within my own self-interest. Okay. It has nothing to do with Memorial Day. Anyway, although kind of, again, not to co-opt it, however, I think it's important to recognize that civil servants also serve our country.
Yes.
And are in a real danger of having funding cut to federal agencies for the roughly 2 million individuals in the United States who are federal government employees.
On top of having violence threatened towards them.
That's just another
just as an added bonus.
Yeah, another thing. Including the threat of the clawback of most of the critical additional funding given to the Internal Revenue Service. Please refer to last year's 4th of July Megasode if you want to hear about our taxation system
right.
and how difficult it
that's
is to right. administer. And yeah, here in the United States, I mean, I think they're going to come in the 11th hour or whatever, but I don't know what the result will be or what funding is going to get cut because,
funding is going to get cut. We know that.
Because every Republican member of Congress is a hideous dipshit.
Pretty much.
No, not pretty much. Every single one.
Yeah. I was trying to give the benefit of the doubt, but I think
there's not a good one. And the fact that these alleged civil servants, members of Congress, are supposed to be, right? Civil servants are doing anything but serving the civic good and are absolute traitors to their fellow civil servants by defunding them. So they can go suck it.
Putting it lightly.
Yeah. And just remember that when you vote for people... I mean, I don't think I have to tell our audience this, but when you vote for people who want, quote, small government, end quote, what that means is a lack of services mm-hmm. that are desperately needed for many, many, many people.
Yep.
So, all right, I'll step off my soapbox now. That's well, I mean, it. Happy Memorial Day.
Yes, it was worthy of stepping on, though. I mean, I agree with you. I don't think we're going to go into default, but... I mean, the reason we're not going to go into default is because Biden's going to cut some things when he doesn't have to. And it's literally a choice.
It's called playing hardball, folks, and you got to learn how to do it one time or another.
All I keep thinking about this whole situation is every 4 years when there's a presidential race, like the Republicans are so lucky because every 4 years they get two choices. I mean, really.
You mean like, for example, DeSantis and Trump?
No, I mean, for example, like Biden and
Robotic.
Like, economically, both parties are right wing.
That's pretty. I mean,
on social issues, obviously, one party is better than the other, but on economic issues, they're almost exactly the same. There's very little difference there. And this is a whole thing. Like,
well, certainly on military spending, they're basically the same.
There'd be a good place to cut spending, seeing as how the military is woke now. You would think they would want to cut spending from the woke military.
You'd think.
You would think.
Huh, how interesting. No. Here's an idea. Especially, hey, perfect in time for Memorial Day. How about we cut veterans' benefits?
Yeah.
That's the way to go. Aha, yes. I see it. That's what, not start defunding these horrific crimes against humanity. No, let's not support people we deliberately traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's just make sure that they continue to kill themselves at alarming rates.
Make sure they continue to suffer.
Yep, absolutely. Not give them the medical care they need. Not give them the mental health services they need. Perfect solution. Why didn't we think of that before? Support our troops, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Well.
Yeah. All right.
This is going to be a fun episode.
Is it, or is that ironic?
Well, I mean, given the subject material that we're about to get into, yes. I mean.
Oh, okay.
You can't help but have fun with it, right?
I don't know what the material is.
Well, we're going to find out. The audience already knows.
Yes, they do.
So this is part one.
Mm-hmm.
On the band. Any guesses?
A Motley Crue.
Yep.
We joked about doing this.
Yes.
So that's right.
It fits.
They are such a disaster.
Believe me, it fits. By the time we get, because this is going to be a two-parter. I got in way too deep, probably. But
that's what happens when you start reading about the crew.
But to explain everything that I'm about to explain, it needs a greater explanation.
Oh my god, they are a disaster. They are just a fucking disaster. They're a shit show of a band.
And as we'll find out, also as human beings.
Yeah.
Actually, no, they're a great band.
I don't think they're a great band.
That doesn't surprise me. I do. I grew up with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny, after doing this research, it made me look back on it. Remember when we went out for the game last Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed, there were two different people. I'm guessing they were late 20s wearing Motley Crue t-shirts. Yes.
Is that what made you think of it?
Well, that and doing the research, because we're going to get into their whole career.
Because there are literal disasters associated with them.
Yes.
Like death disasters.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We're going to get into all those. Yeah. Yes.
I just love that the title of this episode is going to be All Bad Things, Motley Crue.
And
part one.
If you type All Bad Things into SoundCloud, which is our main provider,
it goes to their album.
It's a song.
Oh, it's a song. I thought, I know that, because when I've done that, I've mm-hmm. gone on SoundCloud and looked up, you know, All Bad Things. I'm like, oh, it's Motley Crue.
It's Motley Crue. It's a song. Yeah, you have to put in All Bad Things pod
mm-hmm.
anywhere you want to find us. Because
mm-hmm.
there's a good chance that Motley Crue song will pop up instead, and you'll be like, huh? But anyway, yes.
Okay. For those about to rock, we salute you.
Well, that's a different band.
I know. I'm saying it because Memorial Day, that's all.
Oh, okay. I gotcha. All right. So, Motley Crue is an American hard rock heavy metal band that was formed in Los Angeles, California in 1981.
Oh, wow. That's so, a little earlier than I thought.
We're going on 42 years of Motley Crue.
Are they still around as a band? Oh, God.
We're going to get into that. We're gonna get into all of it, believe me.
I can name two of them.
Okay, who are they?
Two Motleys.
Two Motleys of Crue?
Of the Crue. Vince Neil.
Yep.
And Tommy Lee.
Yep, and who are they?
Vince Neil, well, okay, Tommy Lee's the drummer.
Yep.
Vince Neil, guitarist or singer?
He's a singer. I think live he does play like some rhythm guitar.
Oh, quote unquote plays guitar.
He's mostly a singer. Yeah.
That's what they do.
It's like, we're going to teach you four chords, you know, so that we don't always have to hire, or the guitar tech doesn't always have to be on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Because, I mean, well, and it's for good reason. It is very difficult to play an instrument well and sing simultaneously.
Yes,
like,
it is.
Just
it's very
is,
difficult.
Which is why most of the singers are quote-unquote rhythm guitarists.
It's difficult to play an instrument well.
Yes, let alone while
just doing
singing.
That alone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is why, frankly, I think Geddy Lee is one of the most impressive on-stage performers. Because
yeah, he plays bass, keyboard, and sings.
And those bass lines are not... He's not playing, like, doom, doom, no. doom bass. And he uses all those pedals.
Yes,
for
he does.
The different cues, and he plays keyboard sometimes.
I mean, he doesn't do anything elaborate on the keys, really. Mm-mm. But just the fact that they're there and he plays
yeah,
them.
Yeah, and that he's doing all those things at once, it's pretty impressive, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So, enough about...
Rush.
Enough about Rush. So the group, Motley Crue, not Rush,
right,
was founded by bassist Nikki Sixx and drummer...
Oh, Nikki Sixx, yeah, of course Nikki Sixx.
Drummer Tommy Lee and rhythm guitarist slash lead vocalist Greg Leone. Leone was replaced soon after by lead guitarist Mick Mars and lead vocalist Vince Neil.
I think the only one I hadn't heard of was Mick Mars?
Mm-hmm. He's the lead guitarist.
Never heard of him.
There's a reason for that. We're going to get into that as
boy.
Well. This is actually for, well, it's for a tragic reason, but you'll...
Well, we watched that, like...
I'm going to bring that up. The Netflix movie.
Or, docu...
Well, it was a...
It was a documentary, but it was done through, like, reenactments, kind of.
No, it was like a feature film. It was a biography.
Oh, I guess I don't remember.
Yeah, we're going to get into that as well.
It was horrible. Not the movie, but what they did.
Yes.
That they were horrible.
Yes. So this is the lineup that would put them on the map, and this is the lineup that more or less has pretty much been there the whole time. There have been lead singer changes, drumming changes. We'll get into that as well.
I know Tommy Lee because of Pamela Anderson, and I know Nikki Sixx because he had a radio show for years. I don't know if he still does.
Yeah. That is how most people know Tommy Lee, though, is through...
Yeah, Pamela Anderson.
I mean, there's a good chunk of people that know him as both or one or the other.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The drummer from Motley Crue, who is with Pamela Anderson. We're going to get into that as well.
And you know what's really says something about your character? When you're like, oh, wow, it's so disappointing that Pamela Anderson ended up with Tommy Lee. She could have done so much better.
She could have. That is for sure. So, Motley Crue would go on to sell over 100 million albums worldwide, which includes 7 platinum albums, 9 Billboard 200 top 10 albums, 22 songs that reached the top 40 on the Billboard mainstream rock charts, 6 songs that reached the top 20 on the Billboard 100, which are the pop charts, and 1 number one selling album, which was 1989's Dr. Feelgood.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, I don't think I can name a Motley Crue song off
there
the top.
You go.
But Dr. Feelgood.
Da-da-da-da-da-da,
feel good.
He's the one that makes you feel all right. He's the one that called Dr. Feelgood. Trust me, I've listened to a lot of Motley Crue in the past couple days.
But I'm trying to think. All I can think of, I'm thinking of like Motorhead and Van Halen.
No. No, they're kind of their own.
For Teacher, but that's Van Halen.
That is Van Halen. We're going to keep going.
Okay.
And you can think of the songs along the way.
We can all sing along together.
They are easily one of the best-selling rock bands of all time and are one of the main reasons that hard rock and heavy metal became a popular subgenre of rock music beginning in the early 1980s, lasting up until today.
Doesn't mean it was good back then, but...
It was popular. And it was good, yes.
Yeah.
So the crew, as the cool kids like myself...
Of
know them
course.
To be.
And everybody needs to be aware, as this is an audio medium, but it's C-R-U with an umlaut.
Yes.
E.
Yes.
Right?
With umlauts. Metal umlauts. Yes. So the crew are quite literally poster children for the term rock star.
Ugh.
Or in the mythical sense.
In the worst way.
Yes. Or in the mythical sense of how we used to think of rock stars.
Yeah.
Except there was nothing mythic about this band. Mm-mm. They lived, breathed, snorted, drank, and mainlined the rock and roll lifestyle, which, believe it or not, is one of the main reasons the band remains popular today.
And somehow alive.
Like yes, they are all still alive.
Humans are living.
Yes, they are.
Which is kind of defying.
they're getting into Keith Richards territory. I mean, they really are.
Yeah.
So the members of Motley Crue have often been noted for their hedonistic lifestyles and the androgynous personas they maintained. A lot of people, I've had to remind people of the androgyny of the 1980s and how cross-dressing and gender bending is nothing new.
Right, it's like, I'm sorry, did you ever hear of David Bowie?
Did you just look at any Motley Crue album from 81 to 87 and mm-hmm. there you go.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting that like part of what... defined that like hard metal, hair metal genre was like hyper-masculinity.
Yes.
And part of hyper-masculinity in this, like, display included feminine aspects. Yeah. Because I think this is my interpretation, the idea would be, if you are truly completely secure in your sexuality and your masculinity, anything you wear or do, there's no, you're not concerned somebody will think anything of you, draw any inference from that.
Dee Snider of Twisted Sister has famously said, dressing up like a woman was the most masculine thing we could do.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of right.
Yeah.
I mean, they obviously didn't care. Yeah, but like, oh no. Like,
at the time, of course. Now it's just bullshit to think that that's anything other than toxic
It's amazing that it's flip-flopped. Like, in the 80s, everybody was like, not that they weren't not accepting of hard rock and metal in the 80s at all, mm-hmm. especially conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
But and part of that was because of the look.
Mm.
But they weren't taking it to extremes like we're seeing today. Like, nobody was showing up to a fucking Motley Crue show.
Right. Banning Motley Crue over the fact.
Well, that actually did happen here.
How they
dressed. Correct. They weren't banning them. They weren't trying to ban them over that.
Right.
They're trying to ban them over other things.
Although I would say that I would discourage anyone from taking their child to a Motley Crue story hour.
Yeah.
But I mean, a drag queen story hour, you're fine.
Yes.
Motley Crue story hour, you may want to watch.
Well, I mean, they have a book. We're going to get into it at some point. So you can literally. You can have a drag queen story hour where they're reading The Dirt, which is...
By Molly Crew.
Yes. That would be fantastic. I suggest somebody does that. Let's see here. Okay. So, following the hard rock and heavy metal origins on the band's first two albums, Too Fast for Love, which was released in 1981, and Shout at the Devil in 1983...
They're clearly just baiting.
Of course.
The Satanic Panic people.
The release of their third album, Theater of Pain, saw Motley Crue joining the first wave of what would come to be known as glam metal or pop metal. I mean, glam metal did exist, like, in the 1970s with, like, the New York Dolls, T-Rex, and bands like that, but those bands never came close to reaching the popularity that bands after them did.
Mm-hmm.
Not even close.
And they...
But T-Rex and... Like, Mott the Hoople, New York Dolls, influenced all these bands.
Mott the Hoople, wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Those were sort of like the... They weren't new waves.
And they weren't necessarily alternative, because they were playing, like, bright songs.
And they weren't punk. No. Full punk.
They were glam.
Yeah, glam.
I mean, there was an early version of glam.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this first wave, as they put Motley Crue in, it's the first wave of glam metal becoming...
Pop,
highly pop. Oh yes, mm-hmm. Very much mainstream. Mm-hmm. I remember it very well with my with my little mullet. I mean, I started listening to these bands when I was six.
Yeah, when you were Nikki six.
No,
isn't it two X's too?
It is
SIXX.
Yes.
Yeah,
it's obviously staged.
I'm sure these are all their real board names. Tommy Lee, maybe?
That is, and so is Vince Neil.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Mick Mars, the guitarist, his name is also something different.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so the band has also been known for their elaborate live performances, which feature flame-throwing guitars, roller coaster drum kits, which you can see in their video for Kickstart My Heart, and use of heavy pyrotechnics and fireworks. They are also collectively some of the biggest pieces of shit to roam the earth and have caused or have been at the center of several tragedies that unfortunately ended the lives of several people.
Yeah.
We're going to get into all... Sure. That's why I said, like, I fell, like, into the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. We're going to get into, like, a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Starting with the beginning.
Okay.
Where else would we start?
Begin at the beginning.
So Motley Crue was formed on January 17th, 1981.
Just a day before, a day after your fourth birthday.
Just think about it this way. Just 2 years later, I'd be listening to Motley Crue when I was six.
Was it because of your cousin Richard?
Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yep.
He had the albums.
It was more Michael. Michael and Ray. And that's when, this is when metal was like, this was like at the, like.
The devil's music.
At the height of the satanic panic. Mm-hmm. This is like if anybody catches you listening to a Motley Crue record or an Iron Maiden album, mm-hmm. like, you're going to go to the principal's office. You know?
It's so funny because it's so eye-rolling.
And you listen to how, I mean, you listen to that music now, it is so tame compared to what came after it. It's just like, there was...
Right.
It's like if you think this is bad, like, it's only gonna get heavier and faster and fucking crazier.
Well, and it's, like, almost comical. It's like, it...
Which comes, is part of its appeal.
Right. At this point, it really is. It's almost self-parody.
Oh, God, yeah.
I mean, they made... This is Spinal Tap in, I think, 1984.
Yes. Motley Crue being one of the bands that got super pissed off at Spinal Tap because obviously, like, they fucking nailed it. Like, they mm-hmm. hit it right on the head. I mean, these guys are coming out with an album called Shout at the Devil. Like, they were, you know, they were doing it on purpose.
Okay, yeah? I'm not gonna just quote Spinal Tap the rest of the show, oh, but all right. It just, when you said the album name, it immediately made me think of Shark Sandwich and Rob Reiner's, like...
Two-word review?
This review is just two words. Shit sandwich.
And they all kind of break.
Truly laughing.
Yes, they all kind of break on that one.
Can't say that.
Two words, shit sandwich.
That, oh my goodness, no, that is one of the most quotable movies.
Oh God, yeah. So,
I love that movie.
So yes, 4 years and one day after the Earth was graced with my presence, Motley Crue was formed. So this happened when bassist Nikki Sixx left the band in London and began rehearsing. Just called London. Why not? There was already a band around called Europe, so why not call them? Have a band called London?
Because they're not thinking ahead to how hard it will be to Google that.
Kansas has been taken. Let's see, where else? Nebraska? Does anybody? Oh no, we got one of those.
People know now not to name yourself something that you can't Google.
And yeah.
Motley Crue is actually a great name. Yeah, to
nobody should ever
Google.
Name their band New England. Like it just would not work.
Boston.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one.
That works because it's specific.
No, but you still can't Google it.
That's true. You'd have to. It has to be Boston band.
But if you Google Boston band, then every band from Boston shows up. You have to search engine optimize.
Well, I've never Googled Boston, apparently, so I wouldn't know. bassist Nikki Sixx left the band in London and began rehearsing with drummer Tommy Lee and guitarist vocalist Greg Leone.
Oh, I have a terrible joke.
Okay.
I know. Sorry. I saw that look. Oh, God. So, when Nikki Sixx left London, you know, they telephoned him.
No, they rang him.
They rang him, and Tommy Lee answered the phone, and he said, "Hey, Nikki, London calling." London calling.
Didn't that album come out in 1981?
I don't know what year London Calling was.
I think it did.
Okay.
It was either 80 or 81.
Somebody, great song. Excellent bass.
Great album.
Bass line in the beginning.
Hold on. That's one of the best rock albums ever. Top 10 for sure. Top 20. Top 15. One of them.
Top many.
I was like starting to think of albums. Like, I don't know.
I'm sorry. So before I interrupted you.
Yes. So Tommy Lee had previously worked with Leon in a band called Sweet 19. Meaning sweet like a hotel room.
Oh, S-U-I-T-E.
Yes. I mean, either way, it didn't really matter.
I was going to say, well, at least they didn't say 16 because that would be really creepy.
That
like
would
sweet
be.
16, but no, okay.
And the trio practiced together for some time with Leon eventually, when Leon eventually decided not to continue with them.
Good call.
Well, I mean, was it? I mean, well...
For his own safety, probably.
Or maybe for the band's sake, they would have never gotten to where, because in walks... Nikki Sixx and Tommy Lee then began a search for new members and soon met guitarists Robin Moore and Bob Deal, better known as Mick Mars. Bob Deal is his actual name. He is Mick Mars to everybody else.
I guess I don't blame him.
No,
for...
Bob Deal is not.
It sounds like a car salesman.
Oh, of course. Sounds
Come
like
down to Bob Deal Chevrolet.
Sounds like a salesman, period.
Make a deal with Deal.
Yeah. Lawyer would be perfect. Bob Deal.
It's right
in the title, what you
do. It's all good, man.
So they answered a advertisement in the popular L.A. area indie newspaper, The Recycler.
So they're an L.A.-based band.
Yes.
They're a California band. Okay, that makes sense.
So in the newspaper it read, for the ad,
okay.
Quote, loud, rude, and aggressive guitar player available, unquote. Mars auditioned for Sixx, Moore, and Lee and was subsequently hired while Moore was fired at the same session, according to the band's biography, The Dirt, which is a book that we will get into here. And I'm going to mention it here and there and here and there, and then we will kind of get into it. But it's so still searching for a lead singer. Drummer Tommy Lee suggested Vince Neil, who he went to Charter Oak High School with in Covina, California.
Isn't Vince Neil the one whose face is pretty much plastic at this point?
Yeah.
Is he, did he also do that, like, Date Vince Neil show on
reality? He did some show. Yeah. He did,
Rock of Love or...
I don't get into it at all. He also did the first season of The Surreal Life.
Oh, okay.
And yes, he had, like, his own show for something.
Like, Date Vince Neil.
I don't know. That was, that's Brett Michaels.
That's who I was thinking of.
But he did have his own other show. That.
Who? Where was Brett Michaels from? What?
Poison. Back to Motley Crue.
Not Motley Crue. Crue.
So yeah, Tommy Lee and Vince Neil went to high school together, so that's how they knew each other.
That is like 90% of bands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, really, you get into bands with people you know.
Yeah.
So they had also performed together in different bands here and there in the LA garage rock circuit. Upon seeing him perform with the band Rock Candy at the Starwood in Hollywood, California, guitarist Mick Mars agreed to have Neil join the band. At first, Neil refused the offer, but as the other members of Rock Candy became involved in other projects, Neil grew anxious to try something new. So Vince Neil was hired on April 1st, 1981, completing the lineup that would put Motley Crue on the map, and the band played its first gig at the Starwood, at the same Starwood nightclub they had just seen Vince Neil at, on April 24th. So 3 weeks later, he's like, Got a new band.
Uh-huh. That is not at all unusual.
No, not at all.
Or to
especially
see the same person in three bands.
Because, like, on that club circuit, like, every city has it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's, everybody plays with, like, a minimum of two bands. Like, some people play with three bands, four, like, whatever. They have their own solo thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, on the local circuit, that's nothing to have people play in multiple bands.
It's right? true. Local, yes. Local music scenes, and just, like, being a musician in general, it's weirdly...
Well, you play...
I use the word incestuous, but that's an icky word. Like,
I know what you mean. It's a fraternity to a degree.
Kind of. You see all the same people
all the time. Like, you'll have a sound person, not see him again for, like, 2 years. Yeah. Like, oh, didn't you do our sound?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd be like, yeah, I remember you. And, yeah, you do see the same... Everybody's kind of all in the same circus a little bit.
Did I tell you I saw Truth?
Who's that?
Our sound guy at our wedding.
Oh, you saw him recently?
Truth, yeah. He did our sound at Pigfest or something.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
That's
I
cool.
Like, hey, Truth.
Yeah, we've seen him before,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, he's done the band's sound, too. I just remember him because of his name, primarily.
It's a hell of a name to live up to.
It is quite a name to live up to.
So yeah, their first gig is just 3 weeks after they bring on Vince Neil.
In their most well-known lineup.
Mm-hmm. In a later interview, bassist Nikki Sixx was quoted as saying, quote, I wanted to be in a band that would be like David Bowie and the Sex Pistols thrown in a blender with Black Sabbath.
Huh.
The newly formed band did not yet have a name. Sixx said he told his bandmates that he was thinking about calling the band Christmas. Like, it's... I loved your reaction because it was the same one that I had. It's like, could you imagine, like, trying to be...
Oh, my God.
Think of what these guys looked like with, like, the big spiky hair, boots, makeup, like, Christmas. Any band, even if it was literally, like, a church band and they only played on New Year's Eve, mm-hmm. you still can't be called Christmas.
Mm-hmm. True story, my dad went to school with sisters whose last name was Christmas.
Okay.
And their first names were Mary and Holly.
No,
yeah, I know.
No.
Their parents hated them clearly.
Yes.
And themselves.
Yeah. That's gonna require so much therapy.
You know what would have been a fun name? Jiminy Christmas. That's a good like a self censored name for a band that's gonna be completely off the rails is a great idea.
There you go. So and just based on your reaction, like, my next sentence is obvious. The other band members were not very receptive to that name.
So who was it? Who was suggesting?
It was Nikki Sixx that came up with it at Christmas.
Fucking bass player. I say that as a bass player.
Then while trying to find a suitable name, Mars remembered an incident that occurred when he was playing with a band called White Horse, when one of the other band members called the group a motley-looking crew. After modifying the spelling slightly, Motley Crue was eventually selected as the band's name, with the stylistic decision suggested by Neil to add the two sets of metal umlauts, supposedly inspired by the German beer Löwenbräu.
Oh, really?
Which the members were drinking. I don't even know if they still make that.
Do they? I know the name.
I can't tell you the last time I saw one. I've never looked for one in my entire life, but I'm sure I've had one. Well,
imported beers aren't much of a thing anymore.
No, they were 20 years ago.
Yeah, sure. But,
yeah, Löwenbräu. When I saw that, I'm like, man, haven't seen one of those in a while.
No, I think they're still around. That's my guess anyway. It's my recollection.
I'll have to look that up at some point. So the band's first release was the single Stick to Your Guns on the A side and Toast of the Town on the B side. Which was...
What, like, square-sounding names? Stick to your guns on the toast of the town. One day you're the toast of the town, the next day you can't buy a newspaper.
Toast of the town!
It does sound like, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, we're Motley Crue.
So they released it on their own record label, Leather Records. Leather spelled...
Oh, no.
I couldn't.
L-E-A-T-H-U with an umlaut.
Umlaut.
Leather. They just can't spell. They probably just couldn't spell.
That so. Could be. I mean.
Like, we don't know how to spell.
But back then, this is in the 80s where every band name had to have, they had to spell it a little differently and had to have like a symbol.
Didn't Motorhead have over the O? Yeah.
Def Leppard. I mean, you all had, everybody had to have a logo.
Did Def Leppard because Def was a, D-E-F was a slang term.
I don't know.
Most Def.
Oh, I have no idea.
Or Def Jam Records, you know, like that. That word comes up as like slang, and I wonder if they
formed in like 1979. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Demetrius.
Never thought of it that way. So yeah, Stick to Your Guns and Toast of the Town on featured on Leather Records.
I just thought of something. You know, it would be a great name for a cat.
What?
Def Leppard.
Def Leppard. Yes, it would be. But our cats will never die. So
that's right. They'll just be around forever. We'll
never have to get a new cat. Mm.
We'll just keep adding.
Yes.
And give them more brothers.
So on November 10th, 1981, so that's again, this is 7 months after they formed.
Well, it's not exactly like their songs were hard to write.
No, yeah.
First of all, they just took sayings. Toast of the town, stick to your guns, skip to my loo. You know, like, they're just coming up with shit.
It's My Way or the Highway,
yeah.
Which is an actual Limp Bizkit titled song. Of course it is.
Yes. It is a very limp-sounding title, indeed.
So yes, on November 10th, 1981, they released their debut album, Too Fast for Love.
Is it the number two?
Nope. It's actually the actual words.
Okay. Did they spell them?
Spelled correctly and everything. Okay. With no umlauts. So they released their debut album, Too Fast for Love, on their self-produced label.
Leather
Records. And they sold 20,000 copies, which that's...
For an indie album.
For putting out something on your own, that's a lot. Alan Kaufman and his assistant, Eric Grief, a great manager name.
Eric Grief.
Yes. Or it could be Grief, but I'm just going to call him Grief. It's better.
Give him Grief.
Give him Grief, Grief.
Good Grief.
Yes. So they became their managers, and they set up a tour of Canada while also using their local success in the LA club scene to negotiate a major label contract. So Elektra Records would go on to sign the band in early 1982 to, get this, a $25 million 8-album deal.
Oh my God.
That's $83.4 million today.
Now, 8 albums is a ton.
It is.
But that's a lot of confidence to throw behind a band.
Believe it or not, they would fulfill their contract.
Well, for money, I believe that would be the one thing that they would do.
But still, you hardly ever bands reach their... I don't think they have those type of deals anymore. But
yeah,
this was common back then, like 4 or 5, 6 album deal for this much money. And hardly ever would they actually fall through on making all the albums. A lot of times it'd be like 1 or 2.
Uh-huh.
You know, the band would break up.
That's a huge deal.
Yeah.
After one self-produced album. So Elektra had a lot of confidence in them.
Well, you also got to remember this is a time when hard rock and heavy metal isn't charting yet, but it's about to. And
so they're ahead of the curve. They're mm-hmm. getting ahead of the
curve. Oh, yeah.
Good business decision by Elektra.
They're one of the reasons that hard rock and heavy metal became popular.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really are.
So Elektra helped trendset on this.
Oh, for sure. Yes. So their debut album was then remixed by producer Roy Thomas Baker. Do you know that name?
It sounds familiar.
Who either produced...
a serial killer.
And no. Or... and no.
Because all serial killers have
they
three
do.
Names. Anyway.
Or assassins.
Right.
So he either produced or engineered five of Queen's albums.
Okay. I'm not sure I would have put that all together. I don't know.
You weren't big into like who produced it and all
no,
that stuff.
No, I'm not a production geek.
No. So Elektra re-released the original album on August 20th, 1982, 2 months after its release on the Canadian arm of the label, Warner Music Group, used the original leather mixes to coincide with the Canadian tour that they were on.
Okay.
So doing the Cruising Through Canada tour.
How do you C-R-U with the umlaut E-S-I-G. Cruising.
We're cruising through
Canada.
Oh, no.
There's too many puns. Too many puns available to them.
There were several widely publicized incidents.
Well, I'm sure. Let's just get started right from the
we're
top.
Just, oh, yeah. First, the band was arrested and then released at Edmonton International Airport for wearing their spiked stage wardrobe, considered dangerous weapons, through customs, and for Neil arriving with a small carry-on filled with porn magazines, considered indecent material.
Okay.
Both were staged PR stunts. So
okay. Yes. Well, then that's bullshit. Yeah. Also, it's funny that it's like, the band was arrested, as if they were booked as Motley Crue.
Yes, all of them together.
All five of them, and yes. One held the
and
sign
and the
in the
usual,
middle.
Like the usual suspects.
Yes. I mean, I would put good money on the fact that they've all been legitimately individually arrested in the United States, but...
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. So have I, so I don't have anything to say.
I have not, yes. So...
Anywho, mm-hmm. I've definitely not been arrested as many times as Motley Crue. That's
for
sure.
Or for the
for
stuff
sure.
they got arrested
that
for.
That is true as well. So yes, both those incidents I just mentioned were just intentional PR stunts.
Okay, then
just
that
get,
makes way more sense.
Just to get press.
Because, like, I feel like that's really pathetic to get... like, for somebody to get arrested for having too many porn magazines, that's like pitiful.
Yeah, it is kind of.
That's just sad.
Customs eventually had the confiscated items destroyed. So this is while still in Edmonton. They'd just gone through the airport.
Oh, sorry, this is Edmonton.
So while playing Scandals Disco in Edmonton, because remember this is 1982.
Yeah.
Discos are still around. Especially in Edmonton.
Disco never died.
And everything in Canada is always about 5 years behind. Yeah. So this is probably when disco was peaking in Edmonton.
Right.
They're like, mm-hmm. They're like Motley Crue. They're a disco band, I guess. I don't know.
They're expecting Cool in the Gang. Or...
yes, yeah.
They get Motley Crue.
A bomb threat was made against the band, which made the front page of the Edmonton Journal. Lee and assistant band manager Grief were interviewed by police as a result. This, too, ended up being a staged PR stunt perpetrated by Grief.
The manager called in a bomb threat a publicity stunt.
I guess so, yeah. So, lastly, we're... Lee threw
this is just with this one
yes.
leg of the tour.
Lee threw a television set from an upper-story window of the Sheraton Caravan Hotel. Canadian rock magazine, Music Express...
That's the nerdiest sounding little rock magazine.
Noted that the band was, quote, banned for life from the city.
So they never went back to Edmonton?
I don't know if they ever did or not. I meant to go back to that.
Uh-huh.
But I got lost up in, I mean, this
all the other stuff.
This is like fucking, this is literally like kid stuff we're talking about compared to what I'm going to get
into.
The
trail of bodies they'll be leaving yes. behind. Yeah.
So despite the tour ending prematurely in financial disaster, it was the basis for the band's first international press, which is why they did all this
uh-huh.
shit. You know?
Yeah,
this was back in the
publicity.
Day where people read the newspaper.
Yeah.
And every newspaper had like a little small entertainment section. And it was just like, get this. These fucking guys went through security.
And it was harder to get in the newspaper. It was harder to get paparazzi around you. There were no blogs, no Perez Hilton.
Nope.
No, he had to get. Probably himself like an artifact at this point.
Yes. But. So in 1983, the band changed management from Kaufman to Doug Thaler and Doc McGee. Doc McGee is like a famous.
I've heard of him.
Yes. He's best known for managing Bon Jovi and Kiss.
Okay. So he was in that genre.
He's very much like a part of the 80s scene just as much as the bands are, you know, because he managed a lot of these different people.
So here, why do you have fondness for the music of Motley Crue, but not Bon Jovi? Why do you hate Bon Jovi?
Bon Jovi was just too poppy. There was no edge to Bon Jovi whatsoever.
Okay.
You know, and you're 10 years old, or 6 or 7, when I first, you're looking for, you want the hard stuff. Yeah, that's what you want to start out with. You know, fucking Bon Jovi. Singing about, she's a little runaway and stupid shit like that. No, these guys are singing about, like, you know, down in fifths of Jack and hooking up with strippers. Like,
what every 6-year-old wants to listen
absolutely.
To.
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, my God.
I turned out just fine.
You mean, I turned out just fine?
Definitely with a question mark. It took a while, but yeah, eventually. So the band became rapidly successful in the United States after playing at the US Festival, which I think we have seen clips of while we were watching another documentary about some, I think we were watching a documentary about, something, but this comes up anyway.
So they played. It's not ringing a bell, but where is it? Where is the US Festival?
It was in California.
Oh, okay.
So they played the US Festival in May 1983. And also started becoming more and more popular on a recently launched television station known as
K-Rock?
Known as television station.
Oh.
Known as MTV.
Oh, sorry.
We're talking.
I thought you meant like local radio. Never mind. Sorry. I was paying attention. MTV, yes. So they were an early.
Mm-hmm.
Adopter. They were one of the artists that got a big boost from MTV.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole genre itself did.
Sure. Just timing. Good timing.
Very much so. Very much so. Mm-hmm.
And oddly, Buggles did not see the same success, even though they were the first. First,
they had initial. Video. They had initial success. They were a one-hit wonder, and then they just faded out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure they're still around playing that one hit somewhere.
And what is that one hit?
Video Killed the Radio Star.
And what 90s/2000s band did a famous cover of it?
I believe it was Presidents, right?
President of the United States of America. That's right.
A band, he could almost call that band Christmas. Would have worked for them in a weird way.
Have you heard Peaches by Christmas?
Yes.
Wait, why would we want to order Peaches by Christmas?
No, just
yeah, Lump by Christmas. This just all sounds bad.
Yeah.
Was it a lump of coal? Ha ha ha.
There you go. We've got a ways to go, trust me.
Okay.
So, with the release of their second album, Shout at the Devil, the band would achieve its first taste of mainstream success, and they really never left the mainstream once they got it. Well, they had their down period, but, I mean, Motley Crue is still famous today.
To the old people, yes.
We just saw kids that were
20s-ish, but they're probably ironically wearing it.
They still know who they are, you know?
Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get into all that, like I said. They're coming back, damn it.
Oh, I'm God, I I'm hope telling not. You. No, well, they're too problematic.
They really are coming back, though.
But Gen Z, they're too problematic for... Please, Gen Z, prove me right that they're too problematic for you.
I can prove you already wrong. I'll do that at the end of this.
People are, like, getting really mad at Taylor Swift. Swifties are turning on Taylor Swift for having a problematic boyfriend.
Who's her boyfriend?
Somebody from the 1975... That band.
Oh, the band. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Not the year.
I don't know when he was born.
That could kind of still work. She was born in 89, I know that.
Yes. But apparently he's like a misogynist and a racist and shit and super problematic.
That makes it more fun. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, his name is Maddie.
Oh, okay.
And apparently the Swifties... I know, hold on. One more thing. I find this really fun. Because Swifties find him problematic, they call him Problematty.
Yeah, that's kind of clever.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Motley Crue.
Oh, yeah, Motley Crue.
That is the last we will speak of the Swifties. So, Shout at the Devil would spend 7 total weeks in the top 20 of the Billboard 200 album charts, peaking at number 17, and remained in the top 200 for a total of 111 weeks.
Jeez, that's 2 years.
The album has since gone on to be certified 4 times platinum in North America.
What is platinum? How many?
A million.
A million. Okay. Yep.
Controversy surrounded the album's release for its title track, as well as the satanic imagery on the album cover. This attracted the attention of Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh.
And they soon found themselves as the opening act for Ozzy's 1984 Bark at the Moon tour.
I love that it's like, it courted controversy, so Ozzy's like, yeah, so Ozzy's fuck like, yeah.
Hi, mates. Whatever. Hi, mates. It's Ozzy. Wanna come on to come on to it, man. So it was during this tour when one of the more famous incidents for both Ozzy and Motley Crue took place. While at a hotel between tour dates, the band members got into a dare contest with Ozzy that ended with Ozzy drinking out of a puddle of his own urine.
Ozzy
also reportedly snorted a line of ants, which was refuted by his guitarist Jake E. Lee, but was nonetheless included in the book and film biography versions of The Dirt. The band members quickly gained a reputation for their antics during this tour, which would more or less become a mainstay during the 1980s.
Is it weird that, like, my biggest takeaway from that is how disappointed I am in Ozzy?
Yeah, that is kind of weird. Their backstage pranks, outrageous clothing, extreme high-heeled boots, heavily applied makeup, and seemingly endless abuse of alcohol and drugs became almost as famous as the songs they made.
Yeah, I know that a whole lot more than their repertoire, I'll tell you that.
Yes. The band members also had their share of run-ins with the law. No shit.
Yeah, right?
So now we're about to get into the first Motley Crue-related death.
Oh, the first.
Right. I mean, I had to put that in there because it is the first.
Yes.
And this one isn't even more or less related. This one is caused by a band member. So we're going to get into that right now.
Just directly.
Yes. So on December 8th, 1984, singer Vince Neil was throwing a party at his home in Redondo Beach, California, part of the greater LA area. So just think about this for a second. Mm-hmm. 2 years earlier, these guys signed a fucking $25 million album deal. There's 4 of them. Mm-hmm. Okay.
How old are these guys at this point?
They, none of them except for Mick Mars, the guitarist. He's like 29 at this time. He was
slightly older than
he was like 27 when he joined the band. He was an old man.
Uh-huh.
The rest of them are like 20, 21, 22.
They're at the fucking beginning of the band. Yes. So they were all born circa 1960.
60, 61, okay. Yes.
Okay.
You've heard stories about me from around this time period. What do you think I would have
not
done?
Not around this time period. Around
no,
around
I mean,
age.
Yes, sure. That's what I mean. Uh-huh. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Where do you think those stories would be if I had had access to like $6 million?
Well, I'd like to think that you're not that you weren't a total piece of shit even when you were a piece of shit kid. And I'm not saying you as an individual was a piece of shit. I'm just saying that I'm sorry, young cishet men. You're fucking useless. Fucking useless humans from like age 13 to 30. Like, you just have 17 years of being fucking assholes and good for nothing except killing people. Like, I don't know what your fucking problem is.
Well, I mean, killing people is useful to quite a few people.
It depends on who you're killing, and you're not killing the right people.
Well,
like, if you
want to
go, like, politically assassinate, like, horrible political figures, there you go. But they're not even doing anything productive.
The political figures are hard to get to.
Oh, my God.
So,
oh,
yeah.
Geez.
All I'm thinking,
they're, like, 24.
Yes.
Partying in California.
And have
millions of dollars at their disposal.
And they're famous.
And they're on every substance known to mankind.
Pretty much.
And probably at this point have every STI known to mankind.
Yeah, it's amazing how many of these people did not die of AIDS. Like, it really is.
Yeah, that's true.
It really is.
Yeah.
Only like a couple did. Like, that's it. Out of, I mean, this is still in the rock star days.
Yeah.
If anybody did this kind of, if anybody did like a quarter of this shit today, they would just be cast away from society pretty much.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but at this time when they were doing this was celebrated.
Yeah.
It was like, do more of it.
Well, I mean, everyone was also being lead poisoned. And they had only just recently put seatbelts in cars. Well, so, I don't know.
That is going to come
wild
up in...
Wild times.
It's going to come up in what we're about
to get into. I'm guessing. This is the car thing, right? Yeah.
Correct. So, Swedish glam metal band. So, glam metal had reached Sweden by now.
Do they have an umlaut, too?
They do not. They should. Their name is Hanoi Rocks.
Hanoi. Like the... Like the city. Yeah. Hanoi.
So they were on their first North American tour and had some time off due to an onstage injury that happened to lead singer Michael Monroe, the most non-Swedish name you could have, in Syracuse, New York.
Oh.
That resulted in a fractured ankle. He slipped on a puddle of beer on stage. That's
pathetic.
But it happened and he fractured his ankle. They kept playing like the tour.
And
it got worse and worse and he eventually had to like go see a doctor.
Uh-huh.
They didn't diagnose it as a fractured ankle for, like, 2 weeks. So he was still up there, like, doing his thing all fucked up.
Yeah, because they're fucking idiots. Men, you're just fucking... First of all, you're fucking idiots in general, but...
Hey, you gotta play hurt sometimes. You gotta play injured.
No, that's untrue.
So Hanoi Rocks had become popular in Japan, and their over-the-top look and notorious live shows put them on a path destined for the glamour and glitz of the North American glam rock scene.
Until their paths crossed with Motley Crue.
Exactly. Andy Warhol even attended their first show in New York City.
That's some clout. Although it's like the early 80s, he doesn't have the same clout.
Yeah, it's still Andy Warhol. Yeah. He's still a weird dude that would go see... Had a name. Certainly somebody who had a name.
Mm-hmm.
So members of Motley Crue and Hanoi Rocks had met briefly in London while Motley Crue was on their first European tour. The party at Neil's house was on its third or fourth day, depending on who you ask.
Oh my god.
And it was at this time that Neil...
Did nobody look back at the invitation?
I guess not. Whose plus one is this?
I'm sorry you're not on the list.
Yeah.
Like when in Real Housewives of Atlanta, in like the very first episode when NeNe wasn't on the party list, and that was like the whole... No, that's not when she was like waving behind her head, but still. She never forgot it.
I'll bet she didn't. So we're on our... I never stayed up for 3 or 4 days straight, but man, I've been on some benders, especially at this time in my life.
I'm guessing that people passed out at various points and then got up and kept
partying.
They're
on fucking cocaine and shit, so maybe not. I mean... Some people, yes. All people? I hope so. But we can't be too sure of that now, can we?
God.
So, yes, we're going on our third or fourth day. One of them.
Multiple hours.
So it was at this time that Vince Neil and Hanoi Rocks drummer Nicholas Dingley, better known by the stage name Razzle.
Not Nicky Dingy?
Nope. Decided to go on a liquor store run in Neil's 1972 De Tomaso Ford Pantera.
What is that, a fancy car?
Sports car, yeah. Okay. Very fast car. Pretty cool looking cars. They have not made them in a long time. They're collector's cars today, but back then they still would have been manufactured, but yeah.
So in other words, what could go wrong? An extremely fast car and extremely under the influence, just absolutely brain dead humans.
So roughly an hour later, Hanoi Rocks guitarist Andy McCoy became concerned that the pair had not returned, and along with the band's tour manager, meaning Motley Crue's tour manager, set about retracing their steps. As they drove, they came upon a recent car wreck near Neil's home.
Oh my God.
Thinking nothing of it at first, they suddenly realized what they likely drove past, and returned to the scene moments later to find Neil in police custody, with Razzle's unconscious body being loaded into an ambulance. Mm-hmm. Shortly after the pair embarked on the liquor store run at roughly 6:38 p.m. Western time, Neil was going an estimated 65 miles per hour in a 25 mile per hour zone.
It's like a little surface road or a back road, huh?
And lost control of the car when he came around a corner and swerved to avoid hitting a stationary fire truck. His Ford Pantera careened into the opposite lane into oncoming traffic, and he was hit by two separate cars.
Did anybody else get hurt?
About to get into that. So the driver in one of them was an 18-year-old girl who was rushed to the hospital in critical condition and remained in a coma for a month. In the end, she suffered a broken arm, two broken legs, and permanent brain damage that made her succumb to occasional seizures.
Oh my God.
Her passenger suffered a broken leg and brain damage as well. The occupants of the third car were thankfully uninjured.
Oh, good.
Vince Neil suffered cracked ribs and minor facial cuts. Neither him or Razzle were wearing their seatbelts. Mm-hmm. Razzle was pronounced dead on the dead on arrival at South Bay Hospital. Neil was arrested and taken into custody in nearby Torrance, California, on suspicion of drunk driving and vehicular manslaughter.
We suspect.
You also have to remember, this is 1984. Like, drunk driving laws are still like, kind of in their infancy a little bit. Like, fuck, this kind of shit was happening all the time. Like, this wasn't, you know.
The fact that this story doesn't end with Motley Crue disbanding, Vince Neil going to prison for
we're about to get into those things. So he was convicted of both charges and was sentenced to just 30 days in prison, of which he only served 20 days.
Fuck that.
I mean, they're a popular band, good lawyers.
And also, there's two things. One, there's a failure of the justice system. Yeah. Because, look, I'm not one to say, like, jail people, like, that's a good idea, but you know who we should imprison? Fucking entitled rock stars
who killed somebody and maimed two other people.
Yep, and permanently disabling other people.
Yeah.
They should go away, because that's the only thing that you can do to get to them is cut them off from all their shit that keeps going, and you keep them in until they break, literally break, and realize that they're shit humans and come back around and spend the rest of their lives like preaching against drunk driving and driving under the influence.
And he does do, I went over this in the research. I didn't put it in, but I'll just mention it here because he did do anti-drug commercials like later on, like 4 or 5 years later, which is hilarious coming from him.
I'm sure he kept using them. He's not sober, is he?
Today, I don't know. There was a time when all of them were. We're going to get into that as well. So he was also ordered to pay $2.6 million in compensation, as well as 200 hours of community service.
Unless that community service, you know what the community service should be? Like, you have to help the girl with a seizure disorder because of you. You have to, like, help her at school and, you know, like, make sure she's protected if she does have a seizure or something like that. That's the type of community service you should have to do.
Well, and also reading this, I'm like, there's no fucking way he did community service. I'm like, these are seedy people. They know seedy people.
Mm-hmm.
So he probably just had somebody sign off, like, here's this.
In 1985 or whatever.
There's no fucking way he actually did the community service. Nope. Like, there's no way. So when asked what he remembered about the incident 19 years later, McCoy, who's the guitarist for Hanoi Rocks,
he wasn't in the car though, right? This guy.
He was one of the people that went to go look for them.
Oh, okay, yep.
And came gotcha. Upon them. So McCoy stated, quote, identifying his body, meaning Razzle's, having to ring our manager to bring our guys to the hospital. I just couldn't tell them over the phone. And when they got down there, I had already identified him so that nobody else had to see his smashed up head. I told him what the doctor told me, which was the most important thing, that he didn't suffer at all, and may he rest in peace. He went on to say, quote, he never apologized, meaning Vince Neil.
Of course he didn't. He's an asshole.
To this day, every time he sees me, he runs away. But to me, it is so important, meaning an apology. It is the moral value of the thing. The other Motley Crue guys apologized, but the other guys didn't do anything, and Motley Crue almost broke up that day. Tommy, meaning Tommy Lee, wanted to beat the fuck out of him.
Wish he had.
We could have sued over Razzle and gotten millions, but I put a stop to that. How the hell can we put a price on a brother? There isn't enough money. You can't put it in money. Let him live with it. Let karma get him. Unquote.
Unfortunately, karma was going to get other people around him.
Well, as we will find out later, karma does catch up with Vince Neil.
Good.
And that's kind of where I had... I mean, we can go on if you want.
You know what? I'm not going to complain if we put this into a two-parter.
I think, because when I initially put the cutoff here,
mm-hmm.
I did some more research after. I think the second part is going to be longer.
Okay, all right.
It's definitely going to be longer. But I wanted to cut it off there. It's a good
natural stopping point.
We've had our first Motley Crue-related death. And just... How could you not, like, and that's the other thing I get where I'm like, this guy is a total piece of shit, and I doubt he's ever come back from not being a piece of shit. I'm like, how could you not at least say, hey, man, I fucked up?
Yeah.
Like, not only did I kill your drummer, I killed, like, your career, potentially.
He's chicken shit. Yeah. On top of everything else, he's chicken shit. And probably, ultimately, didn't take much responsibility for it.
Fuck no.
And part of that, I could understand being a defense mechanism, because then you're going to start thinking you're a piece of shit. Now, in his case, it's accurate.
Yes.
But he could still turn himself around from being a piece of shit and become a better human.
And maybe he has. Like, I doubt it, but maybe. God. I mean, I doubt it.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, there's not really... he hasn't. He hasn't. Because you know what? If he had, he would be, like, giving all his money to the poor and doing nothing but, like, constant work for either people with seizure disorders or people recovering from addiction. Like, and is that what he's doing all day, every day now? Nope. Well, then he'll never be the person who turned it around. No. That guy's a piece of shit. Man. I'll tell you, like, not to get off on, like, a John Mayer and Justin Timberlake hate tirade, but just...
But I just want to bring him up.
The entitlement and the absolute hideous decisions of typically young, white, heterosexual male artists, because they're given access and they're given money and they're given substances and they're given they're being excused and yes manned completely. And it is disgusting. And it's hideous, and they do so much damage in so many ways. In Vince Neil's example, it includes literally killing people and permanently disabling others.
Mm-hmm.
So far. And we haven't gotten to, like, part two.
No, we haven't. I mean...
I actually feel like that guitarist from the Swedish band should, like... He's like, well, we could have sued them, but what would that... You know what it would have done? It would have stopped them. It would have fucking stopped them. Sue the shit out of them. Make them... Force them to disband. That... Because, like, otherwise, these people just kept going. And, well, I guess we'll find out what else they did.
I mean, we haven't gotten into Tommy Lee yet. We haven't gotten into Nikki Six yet.
So here's... I will never forgive Tommy Lee for giving Pamela Anderson hepatitis.
Like, he also likely physically abused her, too.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about another piece of shit human. Yeah. There's no good person.
No. Well,
in that band.
Mick kind of is. We're going to get into Mick at the end. No. We're going to...
Here's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot be a good person enabling all those people around you. And that's what he did participating.
We're going to find out he really didn't participate all that much.
Here's what I mean by that. Not participating in the stuff... Participating in the band. He was inherently at fault for enabling the band to continue or to not draw himself from that. Like, a good person would not stick in with that. I'm sorry. Like, it's bad company, not the band. You know, oops.
What?
Oh, I thought the freezer was open. Anyway, random thing.
Okay.
But no,
like, I am talking in terms of relativity, being a member of Motley Crue.
That's fair, relatively. I'm talking in absolute terms, and in absolute terms, yes. They're all absolute pieces of shit. Just some are worse than others. And so far, Vince Neil's got the biggest scale his way, but we haven't gotten to Pam Anderson.
Well, Tommy Lee. Pam Anderson's not in the band.
No, no, I didn't mean that. I meant what he did to her.
Yes.
Yeah. Fucking assholes. The lot of them. My God. I fucking hate people like that. It's the worst. It's the worst. I'm also, I feel like this is stating the obvious. I'm highly judgmental of irresponsible people.
You?
Highly critical of irresponsible people. It's probably because I take the responsibility of the entire world on my own shoulders 90% of the time. But people who can't even take responsibility for their own actions, that irks me more than anything, and all I want to do is smack those people.
I've seen you have those instincts before.
Here's something. You know, you've talked about, like, various politicians. You know, if I saw them on the street, I'd punch them in the face or whatever. If I ever saw Tommy Lee in the street and could recognize him, I'm not sure I could.
Yeah, I mean, they're old.
I'd fucking punch him in the face. I'd knock him cold. I'd knock Vince Neil out cold and be like, motherfucker, yeah, it was 40 years ago. You do know you killed somebody, right? And you didn't, like, nothing. You got nothing. You got no consequences. So here, now that you're old and feeble and, like, 75 years old, you got a 40-year-old woman punching you the fuck out.
I mean, I didn't include it in any of the stories. I'll just throw it in here now. But, mm-hmm. I mean, part of the research was the different stuff I read. Like, I read excerpts from the book and all mm-hmm. that stuff. The list of bands that fucking hated them is just, like, you could almost do, we could almost do, like, a, that could almost be, like, its own separate episode.
You know it's bad when pieces of shit hate you. That means you're yes. like the pun scum.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're at the bottom of they the had feuds shit
with,
people.
They had feuds with like pretty much everybody. So, yeah.
What dirtbags. God. Just not good people. Man. This should be called like all bad rockers.
Or just not good people.
Not good people. Not good people. That's a good one.
That's what we should have named the podcast to begin with.
Not good people.
But we didn't know that when we started this journey, jeez. Did we? We just thought we'd be covering like accidents and like the peripheral and
but now you
get into like, well, how did this happen? And then mm-hmm. you get into the politics of the thing, which is certainly when a building fire happens, politics certainly comes into play.
So few disasters have no political anything involved. It's all or no poor choices.
Correct.
Or any other. Yeah. So this is episode 308.
Wow.
308.
My God.
That was Motley Crue, part one.
Yes. I mean, it could... No, I don't think it'll be a... Who knows? It's at least part one.
Okay.
Of a at least two-part series.
Okay. Good to know.
So.
This has been another episode of All Bad Things. I'm Rachel.
I'm David.
We'll see you next week.